This week on RSVP Update, cartography by ninja is now a thing in RuneScape. This ninja strike brings one of the most consequential changes to the world map. Fishing spots are also easier to see, and ladders and other hitboxes are saved. We also preview the upcoming Abyssal Slayer creatures. This is RSVP Update, episode 870, recorded Thursday, February 24th, 2022, Ninja Cartography. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVP Update. Double XP is live, I guess you could say. Perhaps that's why they call it that, but nonetheless... Hello, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Zant. Welcome back.
Yo, what's up, guys?
We're going to have a fun discussion this week on a very surprising ninja strike and a bit of a sneak preview into some Slayer creatures that are coming on Monday after the Double XP festivities end. But before we do that, if you want to follow along... Full show notes can be found at update.rsbnb.com. You can also, of course, join our friends chat, BitsBytes, or our Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. And, of course, I am Shane12088 in-game. Tanis is at Tanis79. And Zant can just be found at iZant. Nice and simple name there that Zant has. No numbers on the end to worry about. So were you guys expecting much this week when it came to patch notes, ninja strikes, etc.?
Well, when I saw the headline, I got kind of excited.
What about what part?
World map improvements.
Yeah, and the sub-headline is cartography by ninjas.
I was like, ooh, this is going to be nice. What'd they add?
Yeah, I know the world map has always been one of those really finicky things. Going back years to the point where we felt the need to design our own world map where we would effectively be copying the world map, taking pictures of it, and then putting it out on the internet in a much more usable format. But nowadays, barring wiki integration, I think the world map has come a long way, and this week takes it even further. I want to talk about, in particular, the fact that now woodcutting trees, the fishing spawns, divination colonies, and farming patch resource icons on the map will now display site-specific information in their tooltip, and their skill guide now lists the major locations where these can be gathered, like you have in mining and archaeology.
Nice.
This blew my mind when I saw it. This is probably one of the biggest updates. I'm not going to say biggest updates. I'm going to say biggest ninja strikes that they have done. And definitely, since this falls into the patch notes category, is one of the biggest patch notes so far of 2022. Just for the pure accessibility.
I'm sure it probably took a lot of work to put it in. And I'm glad that it brings it up to the more current skills. But at the same time, like I have to ask myself, how often do I use the world map? I use my mini map, you know. Constantly,
yeah,
all the time. If I'm that's how I navigate. But I think for the longest time, the world map was kind of like sparse, and I didn't use it a lot.
Yeah.
Now maybe it'll be a lot more useful.
Yeah. And the thing that really kicked it off over the top for me is that at the farming allotment spots and the herb patches, if you mouse over a farming patch, it not only shows what grows there, it shows what the current patch state is.
Ooh.
Oh, whoa. Now okay. That's a game changer.
And you guys might have thought I was overselling this, but this is what makes it huge in
okay.
my
head. I get it now.
Big one.
I get it now. I was kind of sleeping on this this ninja strike a little bit, because I'm going to be honest, there's a couple things I've wanted the world map to have for a while that just didn't happen with world map improvements. I guess got a little salty.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fantastic. I didn't even realize that. I didn't realize it did the same thing for divination as well. I thought it was just fishing and woodcutting for some reason.
No,
that was stuck in my head earlier this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, the patch status, that's pretty great.
And also, of course, for the trees as well, shows what the tree is and what resource you get from it. Ivy, it says no resource, just an XP trading method. But of course, if you look at other things like the crystal tree, same thing. Then you go to willow trees, those are even listed. Magics used and whatnot were, of course, listed before, but those now all show the resources all the way up and through to Elder. So my biggest use case for this is going to be if that it is time to do a wood tree farming run, and sometimes we don't know if the fruit trees are ready to go with that, is that you'll just be able to, in effect, pop open the world map to the last patch you went to on your last farming run and see if it's ready to go. Because there have been numerous cases where I've tried to go on a farming run, but for some reason the Calquid or the fruit trees didn't finish all the way their growth cycles to the point where they were going to be done. So having this would have definitely helped to know that, okay, let's just give this another cycle before we head out on the farming run. So I like that. I like that.
You know, I think that as well will probably get me using the world map a little bit as well.
Yeah. Because
it's something that I've never really touched.
No.
You know,
no.
Before, you know, after about like 5 years ago. It's just, you know, most things, like if I want to find where a specific resource is, I'll just slash wiki it. But just to be able to go to the world map and find that is great. You know, I already started doing that for archaeology a little bit. But, yeah, this is just fantastic. Just very useful.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've actually, just speaking of using the world map, one of the things that I've started doing with it is that, you know, if I'm trying to figure out where something specifically is that I don't know offhand, what I will do is rather than just finding it on the map, and the things that initially before this week that came to mind with that were the mining resources, was that I would just pop open the map, and then on the world map you can actually click on the lodestones on the world map, and then it will just teleport you directly to that lodestone. You don't need to open the lodestone UI. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, I think I already
did that.
All right. And as for finding things, you could effectively just make it so that it would show that all the farming patches and nothing else on the world map, if that's what you were after with that. And then you would just be able to, in effect, see where everything is and what you might be missing. So big deal on that front. And, you know, I think we also just need to talk about the fishing side of it too, because there's so many fishing spots in game, but if you are using a different bait or if you're using a different fishing tool, it's not immediately clear what you're going to get. And with this, now every fishing spot you'll be able to just mouse over it and see what you get from it.
Yeah, that is nice.
Like in Canterbury with the net, you can get, of course, the shrimps, the anchovies, or if you bait, you get the sardines or herrings. You also have cage and harpoon fishing there that gives you lobster, tuna, and swordfish. The tuna and swordfish, obviously, for the latter two. Big net fishing, and then harpoon member fishing as well. Shark spots there. So it just makes it really easy to be able to find what you get from each fishing spot, which has always, in my view, been something that was very obtuse. So this is a huge update, and I cannot underscore how much this one is appreciated. And it's just like, you know, we're expecting a bit of a quiet patch week, but lo and behold, here we are. This is a pretty big deal. So,
yeah, I think it's just great to have that information in the game. You don't have to go somewhere external to find it. You can just open your map and it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the only one that would be good to add on to this is probably hunter training, because those ones are still just, say, hunter training method. Is there anything else that's missing, hunter?
Don't think so.
Yeah, it just seems like hunter is the only one that's left out there.
Thieving, maybe?
Ooh, that's actually...
Yeah, I think that could work.
Yeah, show where all the safes are and show the level on the safe.
Cracking locations.
I can't recall. Do stalls have an icon? I don't think they do. Or is there a specific like thieving location icon?
I don't think there is a thieving location icon.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map now. I don't see one.
Well, things like the Silk Trader and the various shops do in Ardoin, yeah. but it doesn't say that you can steal from them.
Yeah, those are mostly just distributed throughout the different shops, so yeah. they're kind of handled under the shop icons, I suppose.
Yeah. They also updated, of course, all the font, and has made it so that the font's a bit bigger and to be more in line of what's expected with the modern RSUI conventions. So
that I love.
Yeah. Continuing on, removed the woodcutting, fishing, mining, and divination training icons from the key, as they're no longer in use and can be added as future site-specific icons. Okay, that makes sense. The rare tree key will now toggle magic trees and above, and they added a separate uncommon tree toggle for lower-level trees, including willows. So I just had them all on at the same time.
Wait, so is that a separate icon?
Yeah, no, it's not a separate icon, it's just a separate toggle.
Okay.
Trees rare and trees uncommon. And when, of course, when you turn them on, it of course blinks in the top legend, which just shows how many of the of those there are.
Oh, I see. They just put a different entry of the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool that they separated them.
Fishing spots have also been graphically updated to support higher contrast models so they can be seen in the water easier. And I actually looked into this for you, Tanis. I don't want to make a judgment on how it goes for you in particular, but I can definitely say that they're a lot easier to see, and they just pop out a little bit more than we were seeing before. So,
well, that's great, because a lot of times for fishing spots, I always had to wait for the mouse over text to really
okay.
know.
So you didn't, in fact, have to use your mouse to kind of try and find it then?
Yeah.
Ooh. That doesn't sound very fun at all, does it?
I don't know. I don't know any different. It's the way it's always been.
Right. Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. And I see somebody else here that were... Yeah, yeah. See, we do these things called YouTube versions of the show, everyone here. And... I was just here to show off the fishing spots, and Zant is right here. But for anybody wondering who is just listening to the audio version, I'll describe them for you. They're a little bit bigger, and I think they're also a little bit more blue than they were before, and the bubbles are also bigger, which is part of the thing that helps make it so much more visible. So... I'd have to flip a coin to say which of these changes is the more important one, the fishing spot one or the world map one, because they're both so important. Tanis, which way would you lean?
Man, probably the map, because it's just slightly bigger, but on an accessibility level, the fishing spots are pretty nice. It's a toss-up, Shane. I mean,
yeah,
they're both.
I know. Like I said, it's a 50-50 coin flip at this point, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's about where I stand, too. I think they're both net good, so.
It's nice to see these ninja strikes keep happening. I already mentioned the new tooltip fonts. And finally, when opening the world map, the default position is once again the center of the surface map, Lumbridge, rather than the top right corner of the map, Anachronia.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, very good thing. Very good thing. Also, the engine fixes that people have been wanting for so long are finally here. Hitbox accuracy has been reverted to its original behavior.
I'm still so curious what happened with that. Like, why did the change happen?
From what,
like, were they bigger, were they smaller? Like,
well, you would have to actually click on the individual thing.
Here's how I understand it. So in most game engines I've worked with, your hitbox for something is just like a separate mesh that's around it. So, like, say you have a barrel, you'd put like a cylinder around it.
Yeah.
But it seems like here it was just the shape of the exact mesh.
Yeah. That's what,
like,
was
the
happening.
Whole thing. And I can't imagine that that's performant. Like, in almost every environment I've worked in, that kind of hurts your performance a bit. So I really don't know why that happened or who decided to do that, or if it was just a bug or something.
It almost
that
feels
was a little,
like,
strange.
It almost feels like it was something that was just happened unintended. in an unintended
way. Exactly, that's what I'm thinking.
I know some of the hardest things to work with in this were ladders. That comes to mind. The doors at the Max Guild is another one that was hard. And also all the skilling nodes in the Krosis encounter were difficult as well.
Me and a friend tried Raksha once. The shadow pools are a problem.
Oh. Yeah, that would be a problem. And you know, come to think of it, that's why I was having some problems when I was there last weekend.
Maybe. Yeah, we were trying to do that. I was just spam clicking, just trying to hit them.
Yeah. And you know, of course, what everybody says to do is you bring your laceration boots plus the scythe and do bladed dive on that, which
if
sure
you can click it,
which of course makes sense, but you gotta, you know, just manage that swap and then you zoom across the map and completely kill the shadow pools that way. But you know, I think with this this might make it just a little bit easier to click on them if you're not doing the bladed dive method. So there's that. But yeah, I'd say the big culprit were ladders and things like the Max Guild and Krosis encounter. The spider legs were really hard to click. So, also in
Araxi web.
When
you have to burn the web down at the start,
right?
Or Araxor, my bad.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Also improved the app connection handling on launch. Fixed a bug where the firewalls and cabbage face punch bonanza were invisible. I know I heard a lot about this one because we do have a weekend minigame event as part of Clan Quest. And this did come up at one point when Cabbage
Face
Punch.
You made him play that?
Well, it was on Spotlight. They play what's on Spotlight for the Thaler, right?
No, so, not in that case.
Yeah,
wait till next week.
I know. People are
Panis has the right idea.
People are going to yell at me, but certain minigames are just pain at this point.
Yeah.
So, fixed an issue that was causing the player to appear the wrong color during the Virago and Kalfite King battles, and of course there are parts of each of those that are color dependent, so good. I remember and some of these issues were applying way before Christmas, because I know around Christmas time we went to the Kalfite King and it was said that, yeah, you know, the color's not working, but we got enough people on the team that we're not going to get to that phase, but if we do take too long with kill, everybody will, of course, need to keep their eye out for the color to make sure that the other hints aside from the color were happening, because this was being missed.
Oh, wow. That sounds super accessible.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah. Also, applied a change that should hopefully prevent broadcast messages from appearing repeatedly in the chat window. Which is always funny when that comes up, because you look at this and it's like, oh, this person just got 50 mil construction XP 3 times in a row.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I was going to ask, that is the issue that this is referring to. Okay.
Yes, yes.
See, I hate when this happens when I'm in like an elite dungeon like ED2 and it has the potential to double a drop. And I've gotten a barge codex before and it showed the message twice. And I got one.
So you thought you were going to be rich, but you were just getting a drop.
I mean, it was still pretty rich, but not. Yeah. Still a really decent drop.
Not Shane rich. Just
what are you talking about? I haven't got any good drops in a long time.
A week?
Oh my
God, Shane, you're going to the other side. You went to the other side. You haven't gotten a drop in a week. You're like, oh man, I haven't gotten a drop in a while.
It wasn't me that got the Grimoire. It was someone else.
You got the split.
I know.
You were there.
So just wait. Does getting a good drop include getting part of the split, not necessarily getting it yourself?
I agree that it
does. Yeah.
From all the PVM I've done, yeah.
Okay.
You made money. Your all cash right. pile went up.
It did go up.
Exactly.
Then it went down.
Yeah, the only thing for the drop is the name and the feed and the, you know, and apparently it helps with the ruler test, but otherwise, same amount of money.
All right.
Man, that makes me realize how long it's been since I've done group bossing.
We got to go.
Every drop I've gotten recently, it's just been, it's my name in the chat.
We got to go, just,
Sam. I'm doing solo stuff.
We got to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Ancient casket items will no longer be lost if confirmation of abandonment is not accepted. Good.
Oopsie.
I'm wondering what kind of things could have got abandoned with that. Though, I mean, tetra
compasses?
Hopefully
not what we're all thinking.
Yeah, like, you know, keys that get you the Tony Maddock, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a big one. Wearing Necronium, Bane, or Elder Rune equipment until they degrade to a broken state will no longer result in a force remove. The items, if the backpack and bank are both full.
Okay.
Okay.
That sounds weird. Reaper points are now correctly deducted from an account upon purchase of the Majorat Aura. The reward UI will now be displayed full screen on mobile. And the furnace perk will no longer be active when mining crystal flex sandstone. Yeah, you don't want that active when you're mining any kind of sandstone. So
yeah,
good that was fixed. I wonder how long that was active for. Quick chatting, the dwarf multi-cannon kit items now mentions the correct items. Fixed an issue that caused the cavern chill debuff to disappear when reviving in the living wyvern cavern. Yeah, that's not fun. And fixed an issue where bones to bananas and bones to peaches did not highlight with the Mage Arena bones in the inventory. Painful, painful content. That one is done. That one is done.
Did you finish it, Shane?
Well, I got the points. I just got to finish Dominion Tower to get the discount on them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then I'll be getting
I'm procrastinating
after.
Dominion Tower right now.
Well, it's kind of been on hold since double XP and stuff before, so.
I've wanted that second sandstone.
Yeah, that'll get picked up after double XP. After double XP, we'll run in a bet for that. For anybody who wants to pay attention to that or needs Dominion Tower kills, just pay attention to the RSBNB Discord and we'll make some noise about that when it's time to go.
Yes, please.
Fixed an unwalkable tile in Port Sarum and on mobile, a reworked interface for slain Barrows Brothers has been implemented. Though, once again, I don't know how many people are doing combat on mobile.
Barrows on mobile wouldn't be that bad.
No, it wouldn't. But still, I just find that the whole idea of combat on mobile feels iffy. I think I did an Abyssal Demon task back when mobile came out with the Aggression Potion, and that was fine. But it was, it just felt, it didn't feel right. So.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right, before we move on to the new Abyssal Slayer creatures, I just want to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. You guys make everything we do here possible, and the monthly bits, they're truly a joy to do, as are the roundtables where we get to interact with everybody. We had one of those last weekend, so this week in no particular order, it's actually alphabetical, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S., Junk the Monk, Cook Me Plunks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski Plays, Ling01, Nate the Great, Nick G., Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Renhonk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Skiotan, Scott D.S., Seth W., Stabeve, Taylor B., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And, of course, voting has just concluded for the next monthly bit. And we'll be back next week recording part two of our discussion of looking at RuneScape's dailyscape. In part one, we built the tier list of all the dailies, talked about which ones you should do, which ones you should absolutely skip over, and what we're going to do in part two is talk about what makes a daily good from a game design perspective, what makes them bad, what the good design choices look like, what the bad design choices look like, what other games do with dailies, and, of course, how RuneScape could do DailyScape better, or differently, in that matter, if we find that they do it well already compared to the other games. And as with the monthly bits, we leave nothing off the table. We're open to saying that Jagex does it really well, or we're open to saying Jagex does it really bad. That's the whole point of a monthly bit. It's a deep dive discussion into something RuneScape related. The last one was on skill reworks, and if you want more of this, you want to even just hear the DailyScape tier list, you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. You also get a mention in our show notes, and you help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show in addition to everything else. And should you want to give $5 a month, you'll get an exclusive shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain early access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And if this sounds interesting to you, or you just want to maybe see what the monthly bits are all about, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. And on to the Abyssal Slayer creatures. So speaking of Abyssal, and these aren't necessarily Abyssal demons, these are new Abyssal Slayer creatures. We got a bit of a preview of them last Friday in a blog post. Three new Slayer creatures at levels 95, 105, and 115 Slayer. They'll reside in Centistan. We saw a bit of a preview of the environment on the last live stream for this, and they say, you may remember the sinister place was hinted at in Broken Home, and on February 28th, members will discover the truth. I find that so interesting that we're pulling on that one little thread from Broken Home, which was that one quest that everybody, of course, plays through, and then plays through in under 37 minutes to get all the achievements done on that. And they did also actually put out a fairly flashy trailer with this showcasing the environment. They're calling it a new Slayer dungeon. Level up to 120 Slayer, though I guess it's framing it as that you'd be using these creatures to do that. Talking about the Abyssal Savages, Beasts, and Lords. Now, they say powerful new rewards, and of course we're looking at the Abyssal Scourge, Abyssal Armor Spikes, Jaws of the Abyss, which is a helmet. And I think we can go right into some of those rewards right now. We'll leave the full in-depth analysis to this next week, but high-level Slayer, obviously 95 to 115. The Abyssal Savages drop. Hey, you guys ready for this? They drop a new Tier 92 main hand whip.
Ooh!
You know what I had a realization just today about, Shane?
What's that?
And once I did, I thought, oh god. Oh no.
Uh-oh.
The last time Slayer creatures had a good drop like this, they weren't Slayer creatures. They were mini bosses.
You're talking about so the things afraid. Like the wyverns and whatnot?
Mm-hmm. In fact, it was a new whip. Part of that.
Right. The Tier 85 and, whip.
Yeah. God, I hope we don't get mini bosses. I don't want those. I know now that you're in the PBM group, you know, do your thing, but that's not Slayer. Slayer is where you can do combat, but not actually have to do combat. Like,
And I think what you're describing is part of the fundamental reason of why I don't like the Slayer skill. Why I elected to get 120 on a dummy last Friday.
Yeah, I mean, well, you like the RuneScape, you know, shuffle. Me, not so much.
Yeah. So this is Tier 92 whip. It will apply an Abyssal Parasite effect, which is melee-based. And if the parasite is already on the target, the effect will refresh this bleed duration and add one more stack for good measure. If the target reaches maximum stacks, the duration will refresh. And for every stack of Abyssal Parasite, the target will take damage every 3 cycles for 15 in total. Then if your target dies, the parasites will explode out of the body and then multiply and attack other enemies as well as others within a 5x5 radius of the originating target. New targets will start off with 50% of the parasite bleed stacks. And they say that this shares similarities with Corruption Shot, except it will also tag and aggro its targets when it jumps to them.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that actually could be fun with Slayer.
Yeah. Because Malin needed one of those kind of abilities because it doesn't have a corruption shot or corruption blast kind of thing. So.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that makes me want to do Slayer. Because that sounds kind of cool. I like the Slayer task where you get to clear out a bunch of mobs with your corruption shot and Greco and stuff like that. And yeah, melee's always needed something like that. So this is cool.
Yeah, and you know, I go back to when Slayer came out and I look at the current Slayer creatures that I like, and I always go to the Lost Grove creatures for that. They were unique creatures in a way, but that also had a unique drop associated with them, and this just iterates on that going forward to that tier 95 to 115 band, though they're not going to be for that entire band. They're just going to be at 95, 105, 115. We were doing some thinking at the roundtable last weekend on this about how you would use this, and the idea we came up is if you were doing a Malin Slayer build, what you would do is you would use this main hand tier 92 with the tier 85, or if you're rich, I guess the tier 95 offhand from the Archglacier, and then when you wanted to cast Hurricane, you would just swap to that main hand and use that for Hurricane, and then swap back if you wanted to add a switch to your Slayer rotation. And I don't know if there's anybody that wants to do that, but that's what everybody came up with at the roundtable.
Yeah, that's real try-hard for Slayer, but, you know.
It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned, we'll get to all of this next week and see how it actually interacts, because, you know, it's hard to say until we actually get our hands on these, assuming we'll be able to do that and prices aren't sky-high with that.
You know, maybe it would be a good way, though, to start practicing the whole concept of switching, though, in a less risky environment, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, everybody I talk to likes to do lean back Slayer.
Yeah, well, me too.
So
Phrase's hand.
Yeah.
Though I guess the idea behind this is that tag and aggroing targets when it jumps to them, that's also a benefit, because otherwise you're just dealing with using aggression potions, right, for Slayer, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Use a Lanikeas or a Scythe with that, and you got your extra range and your aggression potion. You accomplish much of the same stuff you're going to do here. I don't know that this is going to necessarily be meta-changing for Slayer, but I'd imagine, and we'll talk about this next week, about where you could use this with bossing, and if it opens up any bosses to be done with Malin instead of the old standbys of ranged and, of course, nowadays magic. But what everybody was really excited about was the Jaws of the Abyss helmet, the tier 85 Malin power armor helmet, that comes from the Abyssal Beasts 105, because with this one, all bleeds that are on the target will increase the adrenaline gain of your melee basic attacks by 2% per bleed type in PvE and 1% per bleed type in PvP. So if you put two bleeds on, every basic attack is going to do an additional 4% adrenaline, and if you're using, of course, your Fury of the Small, that will be taking you all the way up to plus 13% adrenaline for each basic melee attack if you had two bleeds on the target. This, of course, will also synergize very nicely with the Masterwork Spear of Annihilation that extends bleed durations, so that's just going to be running throughout this entire discussion on this, or discussion? Combat encounter, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with this, the question, if you were doing Slayer and you wanted to use this, is you would have to effectively give up that one piece of masterwork, plus other people are also saying that you're going to be giving up the second piece of masterwork to wear the Cinderbanes if you use Cinderbanes when doing Slayer to amp that poison damage up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Cinderbanes are necessarily... I would think you would use those more bossing, right?
Than you do. But a lot of the Slayer creatures can really benefit if you're willing to put the money into a poison potion, and the Cinderbanes can really benefit from that, the huge amounts of poison damage that Cinderbanes can add into it. So it's a question of if you want to give up another piece of that juicy masterwork set bonus.
Well, and if you do give it up, I mean, at what point that's going to make it so that your armor is going to degrade versus...
No. The set bonus just controls how much damage is reduced and how much it's converted to a dot instead of in front, whereas the entire set of masterwork doesn't degrade if you're on Slayer trim masterwork, that is.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. And the question we're going to have to ask the combat people next week on the show is, does this, these two, the helmet and the tier 92 whip, open up the doors for any melee bossing?
Yeah, that's kind of where all roads lead to that, right?
Yeah, because remember from our end of year discussion last year, the problems with melee is that it was at the high end, and we're talking David high end levels where you're going to effectively be tryharding to the nth degree on this. The problem was is that you didn't generate enough adrenaline, and that you were looking at in the realm of 4 to 5 switches in terms of things to just make things happen with that, which is a ton when you think about it.
Yeah, and it's a lot.
Compared to having a nice comfy style like magic arranged, it's no wonder why melee is not really that popular when it comes to bossing. Then finally, we have the Abyssal Armor Spikes. These are consumable add-ons to upgrade existing armor spikes or trimmed armor spikes and inflict damage to enemies attacking you in melee distance. And when activated, they have a chance to apply those Abyssal Parasites to the targets that attack you. And these are dropped by all three of the new creatures. So there we have it. There we have it.
There it is.
The whip is dropped by the 115 Abyssal Lord, and the helmet is dropped by the 105 Abyssal Beasts. I might have to go do a Slayer task next week, and here I thought I was done.
You think, huh?
What?
What do you Wait, think? I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Lanikea gives cross the board task.
Yeah.
Do you think you could force an Abby task with her and it be cross the board?
Well, does she give abyssal creatures or just abyssal demons?
I guess these wouldn't count as abyssal demons.
No, these probably would not count as abyssal demons. At least that's the way I'm reading it.
Unless they decide to just group those all into abyssal creatures.
Yeah.
And then add a cluster task around that, right?
Yeah. Be interesting.
Yeah, it would. I don't know. And hopefully,
if not, you're going to have to blow through a bunch of points to get, you know, a task.
Yeah.
Like you always do.
Yeah. And I wonder who's going to draw that short straw for doing that next week. you feel like it's going to be you, Tannis?
It usually is.
And you like Slayer, so that's okay, right?
I do. It's no big deal, yeah.
But I do have to say the environment on these looks wonderful. So watch the trailer if you haven't already. Is that... Based on the trailer and what we saw with from the live stream stuff, I think this is continuing just that modern day excellence in terms of Aris environment design that we keep seeing everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. It's that same nice style that they've kind of established in recent years. And the interiors are really starting to look good. And this one specifically, the lighting is looking incredible.
Yeah.
And this is actually going to be the first one where we're going to have point light shadows.
What exactly? I know we saw that a bit on the live stream. What exactly is point light?
So, historically in RuneScape interiors, you're kind of just dealing with a skylight or a directional sunlight. When you're out in the world, you know how you can see your character's shadow on the ground? That's coming from a light that's from infinite distance away, and it's just purely directional, like the sun. Indoors, in the past, that's the only kind of lighting you really had that could handle shadows. So when you'd see your character shadow on the ground, it kind of looked kind of awkward because it was coming from this big skylight inside. So with point light shadows, they're able to use singular lights around the room to cast shadows.
So like a torch.
Yes.
Or so something coming from outside.
Correct. So those lights have existed in the game before, but they have not been able to cast shadows.
Oh,
so,
okay.
It's going to be really neat to see. And I believe the overhead directional light's been one of my pet peeves of interiors ever since NXT came out, because it's, you know, it kind of just looks like it's daytime inside sometimes. But this is really going to set the ambiance for a lot of these interior scenes a lot better. And I can't wait till they implement this elsewhere.
So if you
I can't wait to see it in the game.
Right.
It'll be great.
So if you were building an environment like this, would you also do the overhead light as well, or would point lighting be enough to light an environment like this?
I'd say point lighting would almost be enough to light the interior scene. Yeah, it just depends on what kind of scene you're going for. I mean, if it has an overhead light, then you could argue that, yeah, there's a use case for using that as, you know, a directional light in maybe a certain case. But yeah, I'd say most of the time, getting with point lights is probably going to do the job, you know, as well as your other light types like spotlights and things
right.
of that nature.
And
but in most other game engines, like it's very strange that RuneScape has taken this long to get point light shadows, because
yeah.
I mean, personally for me, I mean, I've been doing game development for only 3 years at this point, so I'm using pretty modern tech. Every point light I've ever dragged around in an engine has casted a shadow. So it's a bit wild to see, but at the same time it makes sense given how long of a legacy RuneScape has, and you know, it's the same game that's been online for 20 years. So
yeah. Yeah.
What do you expect?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm wondering if we're, if we need to attack this from a lore perspective as well next week, because they're calling these the area that these things will reside, the Sentistan Asylum.
Huh.
And in Broken Home, they were alluded to, of course, but we also have the Asylum Surgeon's Ring in Broken Home.
Huh.
Yeah, that's true, but I am not doing Broken Home again, so good luck, Shane.
No, no, I've already got my 37-minute one. You can get a second ASR if you need to.
I haven't even done the quest yet.
Oh, the entire quest hasn't been done?
It hasn't. It came out during a time when I wasn't playing, and I just never got around to it.
And no one, I mean, yeah, the ring's awesome, but it's not even used anymore, is it, Shane? Not in PVM. Like,
I mean, it's a good fallback for damage if you don't have one of the more modern ones, but
is it expensive to like buy if you lose it?
I think it's like 500k.
I was gonna say maybe a good wilderness ring.
Yeah. Because I have one and it's in my it's actually needed for Master Clue Scroll Heidi Hole. So if you do Master Clues, then you're gonna need to do that quest at some point.
Oh yeah, that's the darn one I always use a ticket on.
There you go. Tickets cheaper than your sanity, my friend.
No, but but let me actually just convince you guys this. If you don't like the lore aspect of playing through Broken Home, or you don't like the fact that it's one of those quests that you're trying to, in effect, set the time benchmark for, there's actually a really nice audio-based quest guide that will tell you what to click on and when if you press play right when you start the quest.
Well, that's no fun. I gotta at least try it once.
I mean, the quest, the quest is all right. It's the time. I hate time limits. I don't want to be timed.
Yeah, and I imagine it. Broken Home is probably one of the more difficult ones with the magnifier.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
So is the main difficulty the thing you do after for the ring?
Yeah, it's the 37-minute run for getting all the achievements.
So the quest itself is pretty
enjoyable. No, the quest itself is pretty enjoyable, and it's just a regular quest.
Well, there's that one part that's I thought was a real pain, where the thing's coming after you.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what's a RuneScape quest without something that's a little bit of a pain, right?
You do have a point.
Like,
I mean, we sign up for pain when we sign up for this game, so
you do have a point.
Like clear-cutting McGrubber's wood, right?
little bit of a pain point, yeah. Yeah, a little sore. A little sore after that.
All right. Abyssal Slayer creatures coming on Monday. But double XP still happening. Let's do some picks of the week then before we get through that entire backlog of achievements, because there's a ton of them. So, Zant, what do you got for pick of the week this week?
All right. So, ever since I started the work from home thing, and preface this, I'm an incredibly ADHD / type A individual. I'm very disorganized, very anxious at times, but I've been trying to find a to-do list app that works for me that I can use to keep track of my work tasks, my personal tasks, and just some goals I want to complete for myself. And so far, I found a lot of really nice ones in the iOS App Store, and I've just spent some time over the past couple months just trying some out, using them for a couple weeks at a time, and trying to find one that really works for me. And almost every single one that works, you just can't load it up on Windows. Like, every time I find one that has a really good flow to it, really intuitive controls, I just can't use it on Windows. It's limited just to Mac and iOS. So I decided to try Microsoft To-Do, because it's just built into Windows, and it has an iOS app. And dude, it's actually incredible. Like, this is my go-to to-do list app now. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's just really simple. It's really intuitive. It has all the features I need. It's cross-platform. It works on my phone. It works on my PC. It even has a nice little built-in Windows app.
You're right, it is cross-platform. It's got a 4.6 rating on the macOS App Store.
Oh my god, that's crazy. Oh, but it's fantastic, and it's incredibly feature-rich. So one of the things that I've really needed in a to-do list app is the ability to break down the different parts of my life and the different projects within those different parts of my life. So as someone who's a freelance game developer, when I have like 5 different projects going on at once, and there's no kind of structure to it, it's all organic, it's all on my own time, having the ability to divide those spaces up and divide those into projects each, yeah, and still have individual lists in each one of those, it's great. Like, I can just manage everything in this one app and then just pull it up on my computer and it's just all there. And each list you make, you can even add a little background to it. You can customize the colors and everything. And I think my favorite feature is called My Day. So every single task you have, you can either right-click it or swipe to the side to just quickly add it to a My Day list, which is just a list that persists until midnight. And it's just tasks for you to complete in your day. And you can set a widget on iOS or Android to just display that list at all times in your home screen or whatever. And the next day, if you didn't complete anything from that list, it'll kind of just suggest to add them back to the list for you. So, hey, you didn't do this yesterday. You want to still try to get it done today? So it kind of just nudges you to do the things that you want to do a little bit, too. And that's what I like about it. So all in all, really well-designed to-do list app. And, I've never really used a built-in Windows app for anything like this, so it's kind of new for me, but it's great. And I'm kind of, like, tempted to try, like, OneNote now, because it integrates really nicely with this.
Yeah.
And I've been having a bit of a crisis trying to get all my iOS notes intertwined with all of my Microsoft To-Do stuff, and it just becomes a bit of a mess,
Yeah. Just speaking about that, you're entirely right that part of organizing the to-dos is getting them in such a way so it's just not a gigantic list. And,
exactly.
Everybody always says use something like Trello and whatnot with the boards and whatnot, but that's one that never really caught on to me with me. And just looking at this, this seems to be an evolution on what the iOS to-do app does. Of course, you're not using that one because it doesn't work on Windows, but it's got all the different lists functionalities associated with it. And I'd say that the Microsoft one looks to take the cross-platform stuff to the next level with this. I think the only thing missing, just looking at the iOS version now, is that there's no Apple Watch one where you can add a to-do from your watch, which, I mean, I don't know if that's something the vast majority of people need, but it can definitely be done with the Apple Reminders app. But once again, if we were to kind of just move and split hairs on that, That would be the only thing that would be preventing me from using this one, because I do also maintain a Windows computer, and sometimes it's just nice to be able to pull something up like that. And it looks to also have a web app as well, which is interesting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You can, if you just go to Microsoft To Do and click Get Started, you can open up it on your browser as well.
I think one other tiny little thing that's missing as well that some other to-do list apps have is tags. Even the iOS one has it now. I never really use the tags that much, but I can see how it could be nice.
Yeah, can it do reminders when you get to certain locations?
I don't know if it can do location-based reminders, but it can definitely do just time-based ones.
Right, okay.
Remind me, pick a time and date tomorrow, next week. No, it's just time-based.
Right, okay.
This is tiny little thing. There's just a default list for groceries. Perfect.
Okay, that works.
I'm always the one, I go to the fridge and I have my phone there and I'm typing in, what I need. Yeah, perfect. There's a list for it.
I remember
a little grocery shopping cart emoji.
I remember going back 8 or so years at this point, to the to-do market on this. The iOS one at the time was garbage. and everything else out there was paid, and if it was free, it didn't look good, and that was a huge missing market. It's just wonderful seeing how these sort of things have evolved over the years. So,
yeah, for sure. And additionally, if you're someone who is kind of already using the Microsoft ecosystem for work or whatever, this integrates perfectly.
Right.
You can literally pull tasks from your Outlook and your calendar and everything. So.
All right. Wonderful. It's linked in the show notes at update.rsbmb.com. My pick of the week is a movie/book called Hidden Figures. This is something that leans on what we could say the space race, or maybe even mathematic computer sciencey stuff if you wanted to as well. It's part of the story about how there was this group of black women in the 60s that actually physically did all the calculations that were necessary for the first missions to Mars.
Oh, I think I've seen a preview for that movie or a trailer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And everybody always, of course, assumes that in the modern era, and because that's how it's done, but nobody really thinks back to the kind of compute power that you would have needed to run some of these calculations back then. Because if you, and I say this in the kindest way possible, a lot of the people are really not considerate of how much math it took to actually get into space and beyond with that. And that in that era, all of that was done by hand. And there had to be people who did that, and everybody assumes it was always just going to be some guy somewhere doing it. But no, it was actually a group of female mathematicians who did that, which raised many eyebrows at the time as well. And of course, I'm talking about there's the movie version of it, but there's also the nonfiction book version of it as well that was published in 2016. And it inspired the movie around it as well. And the reason I bring this forward as a pick of the week is because we live in an era where, when it comes to things that are inherently based around computer science or mathematics, everybody automatically just assumes and carries forward with the idea that the computers and the calculators can do it in this day and age. But if you go back in time to any point in history, you'll see things like this where it was done by hand. And of course, another famous example of this is going back to World War II and the cracking of the Enigma machine, and eventually Turing building the modern computer architectures and whatnot. And there's a whole movie and book on that done in the last decade or so as well. That was pick of the week in the past, The Imitation Game. And it's always, once again, so important to look into these sorts of things from the modern perspective, because it's something that's not really talked about in this day and age. And the entire mathematics, computer sciencey field of things in this day and age is still very much a black box for a lot of people. And this kind of gives a glimpse at one of the very interesting starting points for it. And it's a stepping stone to kind of looking more into what the current state of affairs is in that field as well. So there's going to be a couple more picks of the week coming like this in the future. So that's all I'll say on that. I've been looking back into this sort of thing because this is actually, believe it or not, something. The mathematics side of it and the computer engineering side is actually something that I covered for one of my classes back in school back in the day, was this sort of thing. I don't know if this is common in computer science or science education in the US or elsewhere, but it was definitely covered in mine, and it was a really interesting aspect of it. So, cool. Hidden Figures, pick of the week.
You know, I remember being on a tour at NASA, being in mission control, and something that really stuck with me from one of the tour guide was like, you probably have more computing power in your pocket right now than we had when we went to the moon.
Yep.
And it was just like, whoa. Like, wow. You know.
Right.
Then you realize how dangerous it really was, like, back then, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I should see it. Do you remember a pick of the week called the Space Pen?
I don't think so.
I should see if I've done that for a pick of the week. Yeah, I have. Okay. I did do that back in 2019. That's another fun pick of the week as well. That was born out of the space race and out of necessity from that. But I'm carrying on right now at this point. Let's move on to achievements. Zant, start us off.
All right, starting off on the 23rd, we have Brappa with 120 farming, Bresky17 with 99 fishing, Crying Wolf with 99 fishing, Delta Polo with 99 attack, Ew Logs with 120 slayer, Good Bourbon with 99 runecrafting, oh gosh, Ubidanubi with 99 fletching, Turd Sniffer Zero with 99 fletching as well, Big Diggy with 99 thieving, Deltar Polo once again with 99 constitution, Godin with 120 construction, Lazy Colonel with 99 invention, Raven Rain with 120 farming, we're on the 22nd now, by the way, I forgot to mention, The Outdoors with 120 slayer, Truly a Weeb with 99 divination, Waffens with 99 firemaking, Lanthan Gum with 99 agility, Scotty with 120 summoning, Ex Polonia with 99 herb lore and 99 agility.
Well done, well done. Continuing on to the 21st, we have 4V47R with 99 magic, Ada Darkmoor with 120 invention, Big Diggy with 99 summoning and agility, Brusky 17 with 99 slayer, Elven Badass with 99 slayer as well, Kiki with 99 mining, Lord Earth got 99 crafting on the 21st. That's, of course, the Earth who was on the show a few weeks back, start of the year. Lord Deluxe got 99 thieving. Cubon 008 got 99 defense, dungeoneering, strength, magic, and attack. Raven Rain got 120 herb lore. Rippeth got 99 crafting and 99 hunter. Psy Oasis got 120 woodcutting. Turd Sniffer Zero is back with 99 firemaking. Waffens got 99 construction and 99 smithing. Woody 1 got 120 range. Xanthan Gum got 99 fishing. Zerks got 120 summoning. Aliosith got 99 hunter on the 20th. And continuing on the 20th, we have Avocado Owned with 120 magic, rather. Big Diggy with 99 hunter. Brusky 17 with 99 hunter and 99 invention. Dark Wizard got 99 agility and 99 mining. Gooey Cookie got 120 dungeoneering. Lord Deluxe with 99 Hunter, and Skips got 99 Strength, Herb Lore, and Crafting. Todio 22 got 99 Attack and 99 Invention. Waffens got 99 Crafting. Ex Polonia got 99 Smithing. Azahidia got 99 Smithing and Construction. Big Diggy was back again on the 19th now. We've been on the 19th since Azahidia. Forgot to mention that. But Big Diggy got 99 Fletching, Firemaking, and Herb Lore. Brusky 17 got 99 crafting. Darkest Knight got 99 woodcutting. Lazy Colonel got 99 divination. Lord Earth again with 99 smithing. Lord Deluxe got 99 mining. Mr. M got 99 summoning. Quest Kitty got 99 agility. Robbie got 200 million construction XP on the 19th. That's a big expensive one right there. Woody 1 got 120 prayer, and Zabros got 99 construction and 99 crafting. Moving on to the 18th now with Tanis.
Nice. And on the 18th, Aloe Sif got 99 herb lore and invention. Ada Darkmere got 99 constitution and defense. Big Diggy was back with 99 crafting and construction and smithing. Brewski 17 got 99 construction. Chodo 3000 with 120 herb lore. Darkest Night with 99 runecrafting, herb lore, cooking, and agility. Then we have Delta Polo with 99 dungeoneering. Itch-Ozzy with 120 dungeoneering. Jumpy Ninja with 99 crafting. Lord Earth again with 99 invention. And then we have Bond 008 with 99 construction and cooking. And then Quest Kitty with 99 construction. And finally, Lord Earth with 99 range. Looky there.
You forgot two of them there.
I did?
Yeah, you
did. Oh!
I thought that was on purpose for a second.
Actually, it wasn't. I was scrolling. I was scrolling and it skipped him. Okay, so here we go. We also have Zant Hot Gum with 99 construction. And who's this? Shane 12088 with 120 Slayer. Woo! Never thought that would happen.
Yeah, Shane.
Way to go, Shane.
I didn't think it would happen either. And I thought that was on purpose as well.
No, I actually had to scroll down to catch the last few games.
Did you get Earth's 99 ranged as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice achievements, everybody.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start with what I've been doing then, won't I?
Well, it looks like we know.
Yeah, I got 120 Slayer on last weekend. We also did some dungeoneering, got about a million XP, and just been progressing a bit before then. I hope to have the rest of it done before double XP is up, but I have to get around about, I think it's like about 2 million XP or so left with bonus and double XP involved. So I think based on what, that's like a couple hours of dungeoneering at high floors, I think.
Yep, I look forward to skipping your name next week too.
Yeah, you go for it. You go for it.
No, I'm kidding.
You go for it. But aside from that, you know, just still continuing on with the daily Reaper tasks and raids. I don't know. I honestly don't know what's gotten into me with that. But I'll
take
it.
Actually, Shane, you should check your tokens. You might not have to do all 2 mil.
Oh. Oh, that's actually really interesting.
Because you don't need the tokens when you're done.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I actually, when I got 120, I used, like, gosh, several million tokens to get my last little bit. Because I had saved it up for a really long time.
Well, I'll have to do a ceremony. I think I have to do a ceremonial floor to end it, though.
Yeah, that's what some people do, but I had the ceremony right at the shop with all my friends.
Right.
There you go.
You got to do it like that. It's special.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also have a few music tracks to unlock from in there. So.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I was saying before the show, Shane deserves to have a dungeoneering hole on the back of his cape and still the ring.
Yes. Well, now I'm
well,
thinking
I only did
it
from
might,
115
it should be a
to 117. I only did from 115 to 117 at the hole.
Your Slayer cape should definitely have a Slayer dummy on it.
It should. But on the alt, I got 80 smithing and 87 construction with protein help with that. 87, of course, was enough then to boost to 90 to unlock the dinosaur pens that I've been needing and has been hamstringing my farming for so long. So I think out of anything, the biggest thing that I wanted on double XP on the alt was to get the construction levels set so that I'd be able to finally take full advantage of the dinosaur farm. And the rest of double XP there will be spent getting 80 crafting, unlocking invention, which is a venture in itself, I must say. I think I'm looking at cutting ruby gems, honestly. Just that one should be profitable based on what the current prices look like. We'll just have to wait and see for what they actually buy and sell for. As in case you can tell, I'm not the hugest fan of crafting, and I just prefer the fastest XP method for that. So,
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I loaned about 1,200 dragon stones that were sitting on my main to the alt to have them cut and then give them back. I figure that's okay. Mm-hmm. So, what have you been up to, Zant?
Well, I haven't been playing RuneScape that much, except for logging in to do my daily Maw and the Criminal Bolts. That's like my go-to dailies.
Right.
I also threw a couple darts at Ambi and Ambassador and didn't get anything good. So, yeah, I've just been really busy with work and stuff, so I haven't had much time to play during the War's Reckoning event. But actually, this week was kind of exciting because I did get new monitors.
Ooh, what'd you get?
So I got these two LG 1440p 27-inch IPS displays.
All right.
144 hertz. I've entered that world now, and I don't think I could ever go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's smooth. It's real nice. And also, I ordered a vase mount with them that got lost in the mail, and that was a fun adventure to track down, but it resulted in me getting a free vase mount.
Oh, so, wow. And for anybody wondering what that means, this is basically just a different way to mount monitors so that they don't use your conventional stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what that means.
It's like a little four screw setup most monitors have in the back.
Right. All right. How about you, Tanis?
You know, I can't believe that I'm doing gathering skills on double XP. It's not something that I've really done before, but I'm enjoying the nice laid back, and it's almost like if I didn't know it was double XP, it wouldn't have changed my routine just because I'm in this mining grind, and it's really nice. It's been a nice little boost. But
oh,
yeah,
smithing is stupid expensive at 60 to 80, let me tell you that.
Really?
I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been what I've been doing here. Yeah, for the most part. And then, you know, just a little bit of stow on the side because Shane corrupted me and now I'm really into
that. That's really interesting. That's really interesting now that you mentioned that. Okay. Wow. Yeah. We did some theory crafting with Tanis last weekend for that. I think Zant was in there listening in for a little bit of a stow teaching on that, but it's good you're enjoying that. I don't think there's anything else for us left to talk about, but if you want to help us out, you want to be on the podcast, you want to write informer articles for us, just check out our Help Wanted page at update.rsbmi.com/help if you're interested in being on the show, or you think you might have a certain skill that you could help us out, just fill out the form and we'll get back to you. Once again, please do make sure you include the method of best contacting you. And if you include a Discord handle, make sure it's not set to private so that we can PM you with that. Also, that beats kind of tracking down from in-game, but that's why we also ask for the in-game name as well, but you can find that at update.rsmovie.com/help. And of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, and of course, YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. There you can go find the episodes, find the nibbles, find the micro lessons, find everything all there in one convenience place. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe or youtube.com/rsbnb. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBnb Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.